Well, here's the interview that the BizNews tribe has really been waiting for. Dr. France Cronier, who is a political scientist and chairman of the board of the Social Research Foundation, will be giving us his thoughts on Election 24. We've got, enough of the results now to have a very good indication that the poll from the SRF was incredibly accurate, despite all the naysayers. We'll get more insights from Dr. France himself in a moment. Well, you took quite a bit of stick in the run-up to the election from some of the smaller parties, because in our conversations, France, you did say that certain of them were going to be terribly disappointed, and even more forthright in your opinions on some of those smaller parties, but they just haven't shaped this time around, the big story being MK, and the one party you didn't really call to the degree that it's done is the Patriotic Alliance, but outside of that, your polls have been vindicated. Interesting.
Yeah, look, the stuff works. There's a science to it. The whole polling community was very good. And the people at Ipsos were very close. Mark Data and what Bill Johnson did there was very good. The Oppenheimer family and the Brenthurst initiative was very close. And the SRF stuff was also close. And, I mean, even on the PA, if you take into account the margin of error that we had on the Western Cape, was inside the margin. I just want to say, too, that a lot of our work was done by a company called Victory Research, run by a guy called Gareth Van Onselen. These guys, I mean, they must be the best in the world at this now, because what they managed to do is this wasn't a normal election, one where the ANC was, you know, going to step down from 57 to 54. It took a 15-point dive, and they called that right. That's amazing. The second thing is they saw that MK was a thing and that it would be big. Now, we knew that before because we knew the popularity behind Zuma. So when he launched, it was obvious that something was going to happen. And they're the guys that sit behind the scenes. They take the work into the field for us. They work on the questionnaires. They're doing the math behind a lot of this, and they really deserve the credit here, because it's been one of the great successes of election polling of this era, is what they achieved on South Africa here. So I'm very grateful to them.
And Gareth also stuck his neck out. He wrote a very powerful article on BizNews responding to Herman Mashaba's criticism, where I guess if he'd got it wrong, he would have had a lot of egg on his face, and he didn't. He got it absolutely
right.
The thing
about this stuff, Alec, is that it's not wrong. It's right. It works. The methods have been perfected. There's a science. You cannot do this kind of work. You cannot do it's like trying to explain the economy without knowing what the inflation rate is or the fixed investment rate. It's the same thing. And there's a problem in the political analysis world that people who do not have proper resources and information make it up as they go along, based on what they read in a Sunday newspaper, and they cause a lot of damage as a consequence. This industry needs to be professionalized. And the examples of what happened at Brenthurst, the Oppenheimers, what Ipsos did and what Mark Data did for ETV, and what we were able to do is hopefully going to become the standard that needs to be aspired to. Was it simply not good enough to run around charting all sorts of views with absolutely no basis in fact for those views, and the results, as they turned out being projected, bear that out very, very strongly yesterday morning and again this morning.
It's an extraordinary story on that side, but an even bigger story is what next. We've got a fabulous column on BizNews Premium right now by Bill Johnson, W.R. Johnson, on KwaZulu-Natal in particular. And we should never forget that MK had a massively funded campaign and that a lot of the regalia on the MK t-shirts had Putin together with Ubaba, with Jacob Zuma. So there's something going on here, Franz, which maybe one needs a bit of second-level thinking to understand where the MK surge has come from.
Well, what it's come from is obvious from the deeper data on MK voters. They didn't vote so much for the policies of the party. I think many are not up to speed on the policies of the party. If they were, they wouldn't find them attractive. MK voters voted, amongst other reasons, but importantly for this reason, that they felt alienated. They felt they'd been forgotten, neglected, insulted by the ANC. And the strength of MK arose from the perception of the persecution of Mr. Zuma. And that perception resonates very, very broadly. Remember also, you factor into this, it's the same point, just from a different angle, that Zulu nationalism was only interrupted by British colonial rule. And as British colonial rule has ebbed, so the influence returns, a point that R.W. Johnson has been making for 20 years, but which has never been taken seriously. Now he and the point are borne out. And we saw, for example, right at about 10 days, 2 weeks before the election, the ANC was nicely on the way up. It had come off about a month out from the election, 5 weeks out, was at about 40%. A lot of very weird stuff that we'll investigate and find out what it really was in newspapers like Business Day, saying that this is a disinformation campaign, and it wasn't. And that's going to be followed. After that, the ANC count lifted, and it got to about 45-46%, about 2 weeks out from the election. Then two things happened. One was the National Health Insurance announcement, and that sent ANC support into a tailspin. And they miscalculated horribly and thought that the idea of national health insurance would be seen as supportive of a broader kind of social wage theme, and it wasn't, because they're more black than white medical aid beneficiaries. There is vast private out-of-pocket expenditure on private health care. People respect private medical professionals. Even in poor communities, it's one of the few people you can go and see that you can trust will deliver a high quality of service to you. And the ANC seems to be completely ignorant of aspirations. One of the things people aspire to, and aspiring to a middle-class standard of living, is the idea of private health insurance, kind of amazing products that are made available by great South African entrepreneurs like Mr. Gore at Discovery. And when the ANC went after NHI, it absolutely alienated the established and the aspirational middle class, which were markets that was already very weak in. And we saw it die. At the same time, the Constitutional Court, or within a couple of days, rules that Mr. Zuma cannot stand for Parliament. And electoral authorities in South Africa are busy playing politics, as it turns out, not focused on running efficient elections, point we'll get. And that absolutely just supersized the perception of the persecution of Zuma. We saw MK day after day. This is why you've got to do it every day. We saw MK support jump, I don't know, 2-3 percentage points over a short period of time. And the ANC was comfortably headed for a 46 or a 47. Had it not done those two things, it would have got its 46 or 47. But that sent it into a dive. Third thing that I think hurt it badly was the incompetence of the IEC. There were a lot of places it was difficult to vote. I spoke to people who'd been in polling stations. Some even called me and said this was the most incompetent election they'd seen. And opposition voters in the main were more motivated than ANC voters who were greatly disillusioned. Been coming for 15 years in their party. Maybe we'll estimate it later on, but I think the ANC lost, you know, on the differential turnout. It lost another point or two, maybe more, at the hands of the IEC. Now, those three events, NHI announcement, the Constitutional Court saying Zuma can't go to Parliament, and the IEC, I think that took, and markets had priced the election at about 44-45%. That's why the Rand did a little bit yesterday, and bonds. And I think that wasn't there, that it's lower than that, consequence of those three bits. Alec.
Isn't that interesting in that you have a look at what's happened in the United States with Donald Trump, a similar situation to that of Jacob Zuma? The courts found him guilty on all 34 charges on the whole Stormy Daniels porn star affair, and his ratings have just been climbing and climbed even more after yesterday's results. So it's so interesting that we're getting this situation now. But let's dwell on Zuma, and in particular in KwaZulu-Natal. If you have a situation where we don't know what the final outcome is going to be, but MK will be pretty close to the mid-40s or maybe even higher, it appears, from where we are right now, and you can guide us on that. That brings another joker into the pack, surely.
Yeah, no, indeed. Mr. Zuma is a very, very capable man. The idea of the bumbling idiot that's been cultivated in elite society and the press is wrong. If I had to go to war, a political war, I'd take him with me and I'd take Helen Zille with me. And between the two of them, if those two ever teamed up, we'd have had a national majority. That the toughness of the one and the strategic acumen of the other, he's also pretty tough. She might be tougher than he is. So you're dealing with a master. Who's again performed very well. What do you do now with this if you're the ANC? One option we started to cast it as the Chernobyl option for the ANC is that disillusioned. Stealing my phone, disillusioned and shattered, Mr. Ramaphosa exits. And his crowd, whatever that is, melts. And the EFF is storming back. Paul Mashatile has a strong EFF caucus in the ANC and outside. And maybe MK back in some form or another. And what the ANC has done is set up its Chernobyl, and it's going to melt down. You know already, Alec, 70 ANC MPs are not going back to work.
Just at
that
National
70
Assembly.
People who within a month or two are going to get letters from their banks that they can't pay the bond. The kids' school fees. These aren't, in the main, people who are going back to their successful careers in law or their businesses. And they know where the bodies are buried. If you let the EFF and MK back into this now, into this without them back, you let them back, the conflict over resources and the like will be spectacular. What will also happen is that MK and EFF's return will utterly alienate the middle classes, what the ANC still has. It will greatly embolden middle classes that are already in the opposition. It will see an absolute surge of support for South Africa's civil society groups to fend off any malfeasance that will now be cooked up in whatever way that will happen. And the aspirant middle class, which is the ANC's last hope of avoiding annihilation, will be alienated. And the odds are the ANC doesn't survive. Now, there's a bit going around on Twitter, I'm told, a call my colleagues made when I headed the Center for Risk Analysis in 2012 with them, that the ANC loses the election in 2024. And mention that only because we do this stuff properly. There was a lot of data that went into that. If the ANC goes for this option now, surrenders Mr. Ramaphosa, lets the EFF back in, lets MK, it's Chernobyl, the ANC, and it's over for them. I think the country will be much better off than people anticipate. We'll be harsh. I mean, capital markets are going to hammer us. It will be a tough few years, but I think the country comes out a bit battered, but we're a tough people, been through terrible things for hundreds of years, literally. The country will come out the other side. Public opinion's very moderate, very solid, and reach another election, there will be a stark choice for voters. There'll be no fence at it. There'll be a stark choice between absolute devastation, which is what the brand of the ANC will be, versus a clear alternative, which is what the centrist opposition present. So Chernobyl is the one option. To avoid Chernobyl, the ANC's count is so low it can't do a deal with the rats and mice. It's got to do some deal with the DA. Now, those deals can take many forms. You can have a coalition in the way people think of it. Everyone's in government together. That's one thing. You can also have a not quite as ambitious an initial relationship where the ANC elects a president with the minority of the vote in parliament. You don't need a majority of members of the House to elect the president. You need a majority of votes cast, so tactical abstentions on the part of the opposition can bring that about. And the ANC could be told, listen, you elect Mr. Ramaphosa. We don't do this with anyone else. You elect him and you appoint the cabinet. In exchange, you give us key portfolio positions in parliament, chairmanship of the committees. We agree on the appointments of competent directors general. We get the speakership of parliament. And that's a nice balance of power. You can also have a deal that falls between those two extremes. But these are the options. If the ANC takes the latter option of the deal with the DA, there is a prospect that it will remain an influential future member of a South African coalition government, perhaps for years to come. Otherwise, this is pretty much the end of the road.
Fascinating stuff. Thank you for those insights. And again, for clarifying that it isn't an all or nothing. It isn't we're going to go together in government. But actually, there are many different steps along that road, potentially.
Many degrees of this. And the parties must decide what works for them. You know, but some broad advice is if you want this deal to hold, you've got to give the partners almost everything that they want out of the deal. Not great sacrifices. So the ANC wants to be in government, needs that. So you try and accommodate that as far as possible. The opposition needs to demonstrate to its supporters that it is successful in countering malfeasance, corruption, ineptitude, incompetence. It can do so very effectively with parliamentary committees, the speakership of parliament, and the like. That doesn't mean they have to stay in separate blocks, though. You can have some overlap here and there. But a centerpiece of the first point of coalition negotiation has to be, how can we accommodate each other both to get most of what we want out of this? This that we must all sacrifice our principles is never going to hold. It's not the right way. Second point that must be made in the negotiations is to say, a second point, is that this is the one coalition deal that works for the country, for the reason that the two anchor tenants, the DA and the ANC, find it difficult to fish in each other's ponds. So they won't really compete for voters. The ANC cannot get back into the established middle-class market the DA commands, completely multiracial market, because the established middle classes are shell-shocked at the consequences of ANC government. The DA cannot easily fish in the aspirant emerging middle-class part of chiefly young black people, immigrants out of urban areas, because the DA has been so stigmatized by the mainstream media. So this is quite a good deal. It's a balance of power. If the ANC's behavior in this arrangement is abhorrent, the DA will have easy exits to say to people, we tried, but it's too damaging, and we're out. Then the ANC government collapses. And then there's a door. And the door for the ANC is there is MK. There's the EFF. Go and do it. We'll meet you in 2029 if you're still around. On the other hand, if the ANC feels the DA is overzealous, it can contrive majorities in Parliament, EFF, to remove the DA from the committee. So now we have a balance of power. And something to take into account in these negotiations is not to rush too quickly now. Let's look at this over 10 years. Let's understand, which is correct, that there is one deal that makes a unitary SA state succeed. And that is where we unite the interests of the established middle classes with the interests of the emerging and aspirant middle classes. Urban peripheries are important, but they're not a major future market. So let's see how can we get there over 10 years. Another point to make in these talks is to say that of 10 major issues, these partners aren't going to agree on all 10. They're not going to agree on Ukraine, for example. So let's look at the things that are agreed on, which are domestic issues in the map. And let's build a relationship around those. Let's park everything else and say it's important, but we will not allow this to stymie this negotiation now. And if that succeeds to any extent, even if it's initially a loose affiliation, sort of a coalition, over time, the two might learn to work together on more and more projects. And perhaps it's in 5 years' time, perhaps it's even further into the future, that they, in a sense, announce an engagement and say, look, this has held, this has worked. And we, after this election, 2029, we'll see how it goes. And perhaps then we'll form a formal coalition. That is the opportunity the country has now. It's a historic opportunity. And if we seize it, the upsides for the country are immense. And into the 2030s and 2040s, we're going to be one of the world's most successful, most enticing emerging markets.
How can you get that message through to the politicians? Because they are human, after all, with all kinds of emotions and prejudices. How can it almost be instilled in them that they have a higher purpose here?
Well, I mean, talk to people, of course. I think it's also important that the public understands this opportunity and why it works. Technically, why does it actually work? It works because they apparently have little in common. That's why they're not competing for the same vote. But actually, their voters' interests are very much aligned. And actually opening the door to the EFF is the Chernobyl option for the ANC. And actually the working together is an option in which all our interests ultimately align. And no, we don't have to do a shotgun marriage in the first 14 days. We can do something more gentle. And I think the public, it's very useful for the public to understand that. I think it's very useful for the business community here to know this, because a lot of them don't understand at all. But there are people who are still taken by surprise by the idea of a minority government and how that works. And they don't understand the dynamics of why it might work in this case, and why going slowly here, slowing the game down, might be better than going faster and trying to force some sort of deal. And for goodness sake, start communicating to London and Washington, which is completely absent, to very early on indicate this is a plan. The best thing that could happen, I don't know if it will happen, the best thing that could happen is if serious people, even if it's initially, Mr. Klabisa, IP, central to the success of such an arrangement, given his future importance in Natal and the importance of Natal, and, John Steenhuisen and others, I hope maybe ANC catches on early. Actually, let's say by Sunday afternoon, are able to say to the country and the world, there is a plan, and this is the plan. You cannot leave this hanging. I'm way to you, got off. call with one of the banks, and the point very much there again was, do not leave us hanging for 3 weeks. You don't want to see what the rand's going to look like. You don't want to see what yields on bonds are going to look like if you leave us hanging for 2 or 3 weeks. So early
get
on,
get a plan and communicate. Plan. Yeah,
but understand, broadly understand, in business, in the media, in amongst our diplomatic partners around the world, in the Russians, Chinese, the Americans, Europeans, understand why this deal can work. And hell, if we pull this off, Alec, it's going to be the roller coaster from where we were 3 weeks ago to these results this morning to what the government could look like in 2 weeks' time. It will be an incredible story, and it's totally within our grasp. Can't let it slip.
Well, it is. South Africa's always been an incredible story. We've come from the brink so many times. Perhaps, as you say, this is a historic opportunity that will be grabbed. Before we leave, you did mention KwaZulu-Natal. Presumably, that kind of a potential relationship or that opportunity could bring KZN back into a non-MK stroke EFF-ruled province.
MK voters didn't vote for MK's policy. They voted on the extreme sense of alienation and neglect that they'd felt on the part of the ANC. The ANC is too broken and KZN to fix that and get that back. But there is a serious prospect. But the NK will struggle to hold what it has together in the event of the absence of Mr. Zuma, who is an elderly person. And if MK, if the IFP has a prominent role in the government, Deputy President Labisa, then there's a and thereby this unity government I speak of treats Zulu voters in Natal with respect, dignity, and indicates to them that it is aware of them and that they are important and that they do matter. Then a lot of that support might flow back into the calc of the unity government in time. And that's how you mitigate the danger of Natal. So this is sophisticated stuff. It's high-level thinking. It's high-level strategists and statesmen. I mean, Mr. Klabisa at Inkatha ticks all those boxes. So, you know, hopefully he plays that role in the talks of the next couple of days, and then you can put the pin back into the hand grenade that Natal has become.
Just to close off with, there were some predictions that the DA would go below 20% in this election. It hasn't. It's gone the other way. You did mention earlier that Helen Zille is a force in politics. This has been something of a triumph for her, not least at a national level, but also retaining majority in the Western Cape when that was being quite widely predicted, including by, often the only adult in the room, as he's called, Corne Mulder.
I think any party in this election that saw its support go up by much that was established has done very well. It was very difficult. The IEC made it hard for them all at the end. I mean, it cost a lot of people votes, but on the differential, probably the ANC more than the opposition. You know, the DA campaigns against its political rivals, then had to campaign against its purported political allies, which were put into play by private funders and generally spent their time attacking the DA, trying to reduce its majority in the Western Cape. And the DA has to campaign against the mainstream media as well. And it's a popular thing to denigrate the DA politicians broadly, but I think anyone that does that has no idea of how difficult this work can be. And I think we can be very grateful to Helen and John for what they've done and their predecessors in the DA for, in this election, making sure that there is a firmly established principle of opposition in South African politics. And I mean, Helen's efforts too, absolutely heroic over the years. We haven't always agreed, but you can be very grateful that she's there.
Dr. France Grenier from the Social Research Foundation, Alec Hogg from biznews.com.